I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Welcome into another edition of More Outdoors. Glad to have you tuned in with us this morning. Martha Spencer, our normal co-host, is out fishing today. They've been working over the swordfish down in Venice, and looks like they got some good conditions for it. In fact, we had good conditions for a lot of different things to do today. And actually, tomorrow going to look a little better. The winds are supposed to lay down a little bit more. Precaution you might want to take, though, gnats. We're getting reports that the gnats are out there. Very, very painful and bothersome gnat net suits. We've been getting people texting us all morning telling us about where you can get them. Also, another one, someone called in and said the bug tamer is one of those bug suits or jackets that you can get and keep that off of you. And other people like skin so soft. There's also some swamp swatter lotion you can put on. My favorite's always been Amber Romance. It's available at Victoria's Secret. It's the best thing I've found. But whatever you use in terms of lotions or sprays, you got to keep applying it. It's not going to keep them off for very long, maybe 45 minutes every time. Or it depends if it's really warm and you're perspiring, then it's even going to take more often. But they can sure ruin your trip. So make sure you take some precautions if you're going to be out in any of the salt or brackish water marshes. And we got a great show lined up for you for the next 2 hours. I'm gonna say save the best for last. My 8-year-old nephew, Drew Dubuque, is his name. He's actually my grandnephew. He was out fishing this exact time 1 week ago today, by himself on a pier at a camp in Lake Catherine, and he landed a monstrous striped bass, officially weighed on a state inspected scale at 33.9 pounds. And if accepted by our Louisiana Outdoor Writer Association Fish Records Committee, it will take over a new number 6 place overall in the state. Largest one certainly caught in the East Louisiana area. Not sure where this fish came from. The biologist that positively identified it took a DNA sample, and they're going to send it off and perhaps find out if this fish came through the Bonacary Spillway, got through Pontchartrain, and worked its way into Lake Catherine, or whether this was one of the native striped bass that are commonly found in the Pearl River and the Chifuncta River. There are species that kind of spends part of its time in brackish or salt water and part of its time in fresh water, kind of like a salmon. This fish was loaded with roe, was getting ready to spawn, and by comparing DNA to other striped bass, they might be able to nail down exactly where the fish came from, but it's certainly the biggest one caught around here in a long, long time. And we're going to have him on the air. Drew's going to join us, and I invite you to call in and congratulate him. And maybe if you need a fishing tip on striped bass, he also does very good on speckled trout and redfish, too. And he's also a quite avid little duck hunter, too. So anyway, we'll get Drew on coming up in the next hour. In that also, that same hour, we're going to talk to a couple of the chairmen with the Rummel Association's Alumni Association's Beast Feast. Going to be Wednesday night. I was one of the founders of this thing, and I got to tell you, I'm really proud the way this thing has developed. We're expecting somewhere between 1,000 and 1,200 people to come out there and enjoy some seafood and wild game. And you don't have to be a Rummel student, parent, alumnus, any of that. It's open to the general public, and it's at the Severn Avenue in Metairie location, 5:30 Wednesday night. And you're going to hear a lot more about it from Marvin Gressy and Jake Russo with the Alumni Association and chairmen of that event. We're also going to talk to Chef Philippe Parola. The chef and I, for those of you who have been following me for a long time, I don't know, I guess it might have been as long as 10, 15 years ago, he and I went on a mission to try to promote nutria as a food item in order to increase the harvest of them, to eliminate competition for muskrats and, of course, destroying levees and coastal marshes and wetlands. And we kind of fell short, although a lot of people now these days, and he'll tell you, are eating nutria because they've tried it. And we actually cooked a nutria recipe for Bayou Wild TV this week, and it's going to be coming on in conjunction with a nutria hunt that we did with Walter and his daughter, Island Heathcock, down in Venice. And we're going to show you how to cook them. I'm telling you, it tasted better than pot roast. It was so tender and so delicious. And he also cooked some silverfin, the Asian carp that's another invasive species. He's got a motto that says, if you can't beat them, eat them. And I like that. And he's going to join us in a little while and talk more about that. But right now, it's soccer season. This is prime time for whatever you want to call them. Most of the country calls them crappie. South Louisiana, they're known as soccer, sack of milk in French. And north of Louisiana, and really when you start getting north of the Pontchartrain area, the term white perch, you hear that a lot. It's a great fish. It's a super fish to eat. My favorite fish as far as a freshwater fish to fry is that soccole. And when you find them, you can generally get a nice, generous amount of them, but sometimes they can be tricky to locate. And one of the guys I know that is the best soccole fisherman around is Captain Clyde Foltz, also known as the Crappie Psychic, who joins us now. Hey, Clyde, how you doing this morning?
I'm pretty good, Don. How about yourself?
Oh, look, I'm just wishing I was turkey hunting or fishing soccole, even though these are not the kind of conditions we like with all this clear blue, high-pressure stuff. But I would take that any day over sitting here on the radio. But thank you for taking time and talking with our listeners and giving them some advice on how to find and how to catch soccole. It's almost like a mystery fish to a lot of people. You know, a lot of fish, you know, you put a shrimp or a cricket in fresh water on a hook under a cork and you throw it out there and they take the bait away from you. Soccole, white perch, a little bit different. And you have designed a system as the Crappie Psychic that is one of the best I've seen and the most consistent for helping people catch fish. First of all, if you would, tell us how the fishing has been so far this spring for you.
Well, I'm telling you right now, Don, we are experiencing what I call a double spawn. We had a lot of soccer spawn in February. Of course, you know, we had that heat trend that went on, and it was pretty hot, and a lot of them spawned, but they're still spawning now. There's a lot of them that did not spawn, and they still have a lot of eggs. I'm actually catching soccer right now with immature eggs. So they're going to be spawning probably into April. So it's kind of a weird year for the spawn. And you were right about the high pressure. The last few days, you can still catch them because of the full moon. Now, a high-pressure day without that full moon is even tougher to catch them. But on a high-pressure, clear blue sky day like we've been having, the best time to go is late in the afternoon. So I've been doing a little bit of fishing, had a few customers out the last few days, and caught in the 20s. So it's not terrible, but it's not the best trip. But, you know, we were catching anywhere from 22 to 28. But the bite really got good about an hour before dark.
Clyde, you've been fishing soccole a long time in your home territory here, but because of the expansion of your product line, you've gotten to go out to a lot of places and have people test these baits in a lot of different areas. How do you stack up South Louisiana as far as the rest of the state or even the nation as far as a place that offers some really good crappie fishing?
Well, I'm going to tell you, Don, what I've noticed, and I have been all over the country, especially this year, is down here in South Louisiana, we're not lacking on quantity. Okay, I think as far as quantity is concerned, we pretty much can stick with the best of them and outdo most of them. Our problem here is quality down in South Louisiana. Now, North Louisiana, Darbone, Caney Lake, places like that, and then even toward Toledo Bend, you know, you have your bigger soccer. I think it's because there's a lot more feed there, especially minnows that they eat a lot of, like in Grenada. You know, those minnows got a lot of fat content, and there's a lot of them. So those soccer eggs get to grow and grow big. Here, there's just an expanse of area. There's not. There's a lot of feed, but their diet here is more. It's a lot different. It's not just minnows. There's so many different things soccer they can eat here. And then you got to talk about the pressure. These guys think they have pressure in their lakes. They need to come down here in South Louisiana and see what real pressure is about. So there's a lot of factors that go into that. But like I said, quantity, we have no problem down here in South Louisiana.
You know, it's similar to the situation we have with bass. You know, we don't catch in South Louisiana a lot of big bass. When I say big bass, I'm talking about 8 pounds, 10 pounds, like they do up around Toledo Bend and a lot of other places. And I guess you can't have the best of both worlds. You either get a lot of quantity or you get a lot of quality. And, you know, I think, you know, we can kind of hopefully get the best of both worlds and catch some nice. What do you consider a nice-sized soccer leg?
For here, Don, a pound and a half and above, you know, between a pound and a half and 2 pounds, that's what I call a slab.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
And, you know, in the summertime, I noticed that they run, you know, more. You catch a lot more in the summertime here, but they're not as big. You know, 3/4 of a pound to a pound would be normal during the summer. But, like, right now during the spawn and in the dead of winter, that's when you catch the hammers here. I mean, it's not unheard of to go catch, you know, 20, 30 of them and all of them be a pound and a half or better. I mean, it's weird. So, you know, those fish are here in the summer. Maybe the smaller ones are a little more aggressive than the bigger ones are in the summer, and that's why you catch, you know, a lot smaller fish during the summertime here.
Right. Clyde, stay with me. We're going to take a quick break here. When we come back, I want you to talk about the product you got, the line of crappie psychic baits and the system that you use that you've perfected and honed over the years to help people catch their soccolay. No matter where they use them, your baits have caught fish. I took one to Alaska and caught a silver salmon on it, so they work everywhere and anywhere. We're talking with the crappie psychic, Captain Clyde Foltz, right here on More Outdoors. Hey, you want to call him and talk? Got a question? 504-260-6368, or text me the message, and I'll pass it along at 870-870. We're back right after this. All right, welcome back into More Outdoors. We're talking with the crappie psychic, Captain Clyde Foltz. And, Clyde, we're going to give out your information because I did have someone text looking to book you for a trip, and we'll get that out. But before we talk about your system, give out your website. So if people would like to get a visual as we talk about it, they can see what we're talking about. If they've got an iPhone or a computer nearby, they can go online and keep up with us. What is that website address?
Yep, that'll be www.thecrappiepsychic.com. And, you know, also colorful pictures, and you can read it as well.
All right, Clyde, if you would, tell us about the system you developed over the years. After fishing soccolay for years and years, you've kind of come up with your own invention, and tell people what the components are and how to fish it.
Well, as you know, you and I have spoke in length a lot about it, and a lot of people out there might not know how it came about, but I was talking with bass fishermen one day, you know, about 7 years ago, and they were talking about how these trailers help out. There are certain lures, you know, be it port trailers or split tail trailers, whatever all these guys use. I'm not a bass fisherman myself, but I just came home one day from work and told my wife, I said, I've been listening to all these bass guys talking about all these trailers to help them, you know, catch more bass, track more bass, get a better strike. I said, if it works on bass, it stands to reason that it should work on soccolay. So I just went over to the store and found the color bait I like. You know, I love that start truce. It's kind of like a line truce. And I put a little slivers out of it and started using them. Of course, I sent them up with my psychic sauce that we've named it now. But like you said earlier, I got 30 years of soccer fishing experience, and I've been taking with this sauce for 15 years. There's nothing on the market. So I sent these little trailers up, and my son and I started using them. And we actually used them for 2 years before we started the company. And we had tremendous success with them, and it was just amazing what it did for me. You know, having the experience I have done, and new experiences too. I remember times when I had to actually cut the skirts on some of my tube jigs because the sockeye was doing what we call shark biting. And I noticed by putting these little simple scented trailers, adding them to anything I'm fishing with, that it kind of eliminates that. They come up to it, you know, the extra action on there with that tail moving around and that scent, it kind of eliminates that, and they hit it harder and they hit it more often. And it's just amazing the difference that it creates for you when you're using them.
Now, you like a particular type of jig head. Explain that jig head and why you think that is the one that works the best.
Well, Don, if you've ever been to any of my seminars or any of my teachings, you'll know that I only use an extremely flat jig head. And what I like to tell everyone that cares to come and listen to what I have to say, if you take a marble and you drop it in an aquarium, it goes from the top straight down to the bottom with no movement. But if you toss a quarter in that aquarium, what do you get? You get some fluttering. So that's why I like a flat jig head. I like a quarter, flat edges, and you get a little bit of action. Everything I use, I like to take and give me an edge. So I'm not just going to use anything just to use it. Try it out and see if it gives me an edge. And that really gives me an edge. Now, a lot of my customers are like, well, look, can I fit them off? And I'm like, look, until I come out with mine, I will be coming out with one soon. Just get around jig head and take a hammer to it, you know, and an end point and smash it, which is what I used to do before I found the ones that I do now. But we will be coming out with the jig head in the very near future.
And talk about the little scented beads that you put on there, the BBs.
Yeah, we call that our crappie ammo. And what happened with that, Don, is like I was talking earlier about our psychic sauce. There's nothing like it on the market. So, there's got to be a way that I can make something that, number one, is going to last longer than anything else on the market. Number two, it gives me an opportunity to add more scent, more of that psychic sauce to my lure. So that's why we developed the crappie ammo. It's tiny, it's small, which is a good thing. It's round, so there's not a lot of pull, from going through the water. There's no edges on it, unlike our trailers, which are designed with edges to grab the water and give you that action. So being round like they are, being small like they are, they stay put. And, I salt infuse them, which whenever you salt infuse a product, you make it more porous like a sponge. So it really absorbs a lot of that psychic sauce. So I just put it right behind my trailer. It helps anchor that trailer right next to the bait where it needs to stay. And, it carries a lot more scent with it.
All right, so now we got it all rigged. Talk about fishing it tight line versus under a cork.
Well, I can't talk too much about the tight line deal because I never fish that way. I always fish with a cork. And the reason for that, Don, is I'm a visual person. So I like to watch that cork, and I study it. Big time. I mean, if you're in a boat with me like you've been before, I'm not taking my eye off of that cork. I gotta talk real loud so you can hear me, because if that cork's in the water, I'm looking straight ahead or straight to the side of that cork. My son, on the other hand, he's the type of guy. He's a spinnerbait fisherman. The difference with that is the feel. He can tell me that he knows what type of fish it is by the feel, by what's happening. And he can feel what's going on. He knows what's best on the bait. And I'm exactly the opposite. I can tell what type of bite I'm getting by watching that cork and studying that cork. So I really don't do the tight lining. I always fish with a cork. And, I've been in areas. I've fished in Connecticut and Rhode Island where I didn't have a choice, because the crappie was so deep. But I still didn't feel them, because all I did was troll. I threw the bait out there, let it sink down as far as it would go, and then moved about 1 mile an hour in the boat, and when I'd see the rod tip, you know, starting to go down, I'd set the hook, and sure enough, there'd be crappie on there. So that's really the only experience I've had fishing, you know, not under a cart.
Mm-hmm. If the fish, and you don't run into that generally around here because most of our water is pretty shallow, but if you did, a sliding cork would work if you need to get it down to a deeper depth than what you could normally just pull off your pole and put a cork on it. Oh, we lost him. Okay, well, let's take a quick break here, see if we can get him back for a quick wrap-up, and we'll be right back with more Outdoors right here on WWL 105.3 FM HD2. All right, if you're just tuning in, we've been talking with the crappie psychic he goes by. I call him the crappie psychotic. He's nuts about catching crappie and sockeye. Captain Clyde Foltz, he's the owner of the Crappie Psychic line of baits. He's also a professional fishing guide. We'll give out his contact information if you'd like to book a trip with him in just a moment. But, Clyde, we're finishing up and talking about, you know, how to fish strategically with your bait. And the question I had asked was, if you're fishing, if you got to find those fish deeper than what you can just put your cork on at the tip of your rod and then still have enough to get down to the water, can you use a sliding cork to fish it? Oh, okay. We lost Clyde then. All right. Well, let's see. Do we have Chef Philippe on? All right, well, let's go to Chef Philippe Parola. Sorry, we'll have to get our conversation with Clyde Foltz continued another time. Buongiorno, Chef Philippe.
Bonjour, mon ami.
How you doing this morning?
Well, I'm good. I got my Nutria taco for breakfast.
Boy, that really came out good, and we want to thank you for that little cooking demonstration. Well, before we start giving an update on the silverfin, talk about where we are with Nutria and as a food source. You know, they put the $5 bounty on the tails, and that's increased the harvest of them, but I don't know if that's increased the amount of Nutria that are consumed, and that would be a shame.
Well, you know, let's put it to you this way. There is no 1 week that passed by that people are asking me, where can I get some Nutria? And that's all year round I'm talking about. And practically from all over the places in the country. So the word is spread out pretty well that it is a good thing to eat. They are herbivores. Everybody knows that. The meat is extremely nutritious, so there is a demand out there for sure. And I believe that locally, after the work we have done years ago, there is more people consuming Nutria than ever, and that's a fact. I know that. So we have a website where we show the how to clean the Nutria, how to prepare it in different ways. So I mean, the word is out. That's the only thing you can do, you know, is continue promoting how good the meat is and how good it is, just like we did the other day.
And if you would, give us some suggestions for people that would be starters. And, you know, you brought up a very important part about, you know, sportsmen who are cooks and getting recipes that generally if they see one, unless it's printed in a book and they can follow it, they generally want something that's very quick and very easy. And I don't know if it gets any quick and easy than what we did, but maybe give them a suggestion on cooking Nutria.
Well, you know, the thing is, it's going to take time to cook a Nutria, just like a rabbit or a squirrel. You know, you have to stew it or simply put it on a barbecue pit, you know, like we did. We used over the raspberry dressing on it, and you can cut it with a little brown sugar and Cajun seasoning of your taste, and then you put it on a barbecue pit. And anyone, and you know that, in the South especially, we all know how to barbecue. And that's not any different than any other meat, except that you got to fully cook it. It's not that hard. You know, the skinning part of it, so that's the cleaning part of the animal, that's something perhaps can be challenging if you're not a good outdoor that are used to clean Nutria and squirrel or rabbit or even deer. So if you don't mind getting your hand dirty, it's worth it. You know, just clean it. I got a video that is easy. to watch on canbeatmem.us. I'll give you an idea how simple that the process is.
Can'tbeatemeatem.us is the website, and you can, and that's really good that you got that instructional video up there. But tell them what parts of the Nutria do you use?
Well, I like the Hind saddle simply because they performance swimmer, and there is a lot of meat out there, you know, on the Hind saddle, especially the back leg. I mean, the rabbit is pretty much a similar thing, too. If you look at the rabbit, the structure of a rabbit, the back leg, you know, the hind saddle is strong. But on the Nutria, it's really stronger than any other mammal that I know, simply because they really are all strong swimmer, and they use their back feet for many running and jumping or whatever. So the hind saddle is definitely where you get the most meat. But you can cook the entire Nutria and stew it out for sure. Like we did know the other day when we kind of partially grilled it nicely and then put it into a broth and cook it down until the meat fall off the bones. I mean, that are very simple instruction. You know, you grill it. You season it, you grill it, and then put it down, you know, cook it down on a, with a broth, chicken broth, beef broth, and all the way until the meat fell off the bone, and then you really have something good to eat.
Yeah, it's just, you know, like you would treat it like a pulled pork, you know, where you can make barbecue sandwiches.
Today, remember?
Yeah, right. Burritos, tacos, you could put it in jambalaya, just about anything.
And look, we even converted some people who don't eat meat. Remember?
Yeah, we had a vegan lady there, and she said, "I don't eat meat," but she ate that Nutria and she enjoyed it. So there was
I mean,
they did. Yeah.
You know, when it's well prepared, well done, then you don't have no argument. You really don't.
Definitely, definitely. Well, hopefully people will try it, and more people will get to use it, because now we got the recreational season where it's a long season and people are allowed to go out there. There's no limits on them. And as other game gets scarce and hard to find, the Nutria are still very plentiful.
I would like to say to most folks out there, this is the most nutritious red meat that you will never encounter. It's extremely rich in protein. And it is lean, it's low fat. So if you want something healthy to eat, I guarantee you that you get you a meal with a Nutria, it will be the best meal you ever have, nutrition-wise and healthy-wise.
Yep. Now, people don't understand, and we'll talk about this. It's also another problem, but a different nature with the silver carp. But why is it that Nutria, or raglan d'Inde, as the French call it, just has not taken off, and we're not seeing it in stores, and we're not seeing it in restaurants? That it's
well,
more like wild game.
You know, we did that. We were authorized by the State Department of Agriculture to actually process it and commercialize the meat in different aspects, such as you know, smoked raglan d'Inde, sausages, gumbo, and restaurants were on board. But when the FDA dropped the ball that we could not cross the state line with FDA approval and all, that was really the bummer for us, simply because we needed to cross the line of Louisiana to get this meat out there as a nationwide spread. So it was like, okay, well, it's good for us in Louisiana, but it's not good enough for the rest of the country or the world. And that was really not a good marketing strategy for us. So regulation policymakers were there to really slow this down to the point to stop it. And it's the same thing you see with wild boar. I mean, that's come from all the mammals, wild boar, venison. You can commercialize any of that. And it's a shame for the wild boar, for instance. That's another issue about a mammal that it really is creating a ton of damage to farm and other things and in the nation. And yet you got some dumb people out there that don't understand actually that this is a good protein. This is a you know, a good sausage or a wild boar, which we humankind have been eating wild boar since the beginning of time. And yet today you're going to have some idiots out there that's going to say, oh, well, due to liability and, you know, perhaps we could get sick from those pig. You know, we don't want that to happen. So they stopped the commercialization of wild boar. But yet you can take a wild boar, all right, and bring it to LSU tailgate out there and barbecue it, because they'll not commercialize it, but nobody will stop them to barbecue it and serve thousands of people. So if the problem were to really about you know, contamination and making people sick, then they got to rewrite their book out there, because this is don't make absolute no sense. And if you were to create a commercialized to commercialize the wild boar and putting sausage and whatever, authorize a chef to buy from trappers, then you will not have that issue. It will be an economic impact. It will be, I mean, it'll create jobs. And we know what to do in the restaurant industry. And you know, you hear more people getting sick buying lettuce and tomatoes in a grocery store nowadays, then you will hear people getting sick on eating wild game. So, yeah. Well, you know, the priority on that set right.
Yeah, you know, people from another planet, if they watch what was going on here, where we've got people in certain parts of this planet that are starving to death and protein deprived.
You don't need to be from another planet, Don, and I've said all along, you know, we're facing hunger here in the world and in the United States. And
that's right.
Is not a problem that's going down. It's a problem that's going to be ongoing for a long time. And one day, sooner or later, our kids, grandkids, a future generation is going to face food restriction. But they're going to look at our era here, the most wasteful era in food that in modern
history.
Human history.
Yeah.
For
You're
sure.
Exactly right.
You know, we could take and tap up those nice source of protein, serve our kids in public school that don't eat absolutely nothing nutritious. And you got our leaders out there somewhere that pretend we're going to bring some good food to our kids out there. But think about it, Don. These are natural protein. When is the last time that anyone had a natural protein on their dining table? Think about it.
Well, it happens quite frequently at my house, but
yeah,
in most
places,
maybe
at your house,
right.
And it happened when I go hunting too. But
right.
Generally, no.
No, you're right.
And
you're
that's why we have such a problem with obesity, with all kind of diseases related to malnutrition.
Yes, that's a shame. With
yeah,
the technology
but anyway,
and knowledge
we
have to suffer with that right now is incredible. Well,
yeah,
Philippe, we're going to take
the
break.
Yep,
we're going to talk about Asian carp. We come back from this break. That was something else we were cooking, and it's a kind of a similar story. We got a great product. It's super, but unfortunately can't get it off the ground, but it's starting to. We got at least one way, and you'll be able to taste it at next week's Rummel's Beef Feast. Chef Philippe is going to be there fixing it up, and we'll tell you what it is. Coming back right after this time out, you'll listen to More Outdoors, WWL 105.3 FM HD2 Radio, and we live stream at DonTheOutdoorsGuy.com. And we're talking with Chef Philippe Parola. You may have seen him on one of our Bayou Wild TV shows, talking about silver carp, Asian carp, another invasive species that's become quite a problem here in the United States, and it has expanded southward all the way now into Louisiana, where it's become very, very prevalent in our waters. And he applies his can't beat 'em, eat 'em theory to the silver carp also. Philippe, tell us the latest updates on the silver carp situation. What is being done by this state or other states in order to try to at least, you know, keep them a little bit under control? We're never going to eradicate them for obvious reasons, but what's being done to keep them in check as best we can?
Well, you know, eat the problem. That's my slogan, which can be them, eat them, when it comes to the Asian carp. And there's one thing that I would like to kind of said to the listener, you guys need to come at the Beast Feast because we're going to be serving the Asian Cup in fish cake version. And you don't hear that from on your little advertisement, but it's important for the people to know that it is a good fish to eat. Now, what is done? Well, let me say this. If it were that easy, it would have been done long ago, and we won't have that problem. So it is not an easy thing to achieve. And we are pretty much here in Louisiana the only group that's got a plan to market, to process and market those invasive fish, the Asian carp, under the name brand Silverfin, which, you know, is our brand, and having the fish cake out there. Now, it is taken off the ground, definitely. We are in several universities, schools, and caterings, and restaurants, some restaurants, not several, but some of them. But we mainly do well, and our focus are mainly up north, simply because up there they know the problem of the Asian carp, so we don't have to sell the problem. And they embrace our product as a solution. Down here, because two things, is that the problem is not really a known fact, you know. So, and then we spoil with seafood, fresh seafood. So restaurants and anybody else, it's hard to kind of break the ice in Louisiana with a frozen fish cake. But on the other hand, we're probably a bit ahead of our time here in Louisiana with such product. But it is working, and it's going to take quite a year or two before we really break ice in making a difference into commercially harvest those fish, which is the only solution that we have. And let's be clear about this. I just received another email the other day, oh, we can eradicate. These are just phony statements. When you look at where those fish are from Canada all the way down to our bayou of the back bayous and the saltwater, literally, how can you eradicate a fish that are into all the river streams of the entire Mississippi Basin and more going east and west? Actually, I was watching a documentary that's called Carp Diem, and you can look at that, I think, on Netflix. Carp Diem, A Fish Tale. And it's talking about the problem up north with around the Great Lake, which is spent hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars to try to protect, okay? And they were saying that, and the same thing that I've saying all along, another 15 to 20 years of this without having a plan, this fish is going to be all over the United States, everywhere. I mean, and Canada. So the North American continent will be totally invaded by the Asian carp, and that won't be a pretty picture. That's a known fact that it's a reality. Let's put it this way. Not a known fact, but a reality. So the plan is simple. You get a product out of both Asian carp, just like we have, and you do a marketing campaign with such product, and we will win. There is no doubt, and we're doing well. We are not here to make significant numbers into taking the fish out of the water yet, but it's getting there.
So, I guess what it may take, and hopefully it won't come to this, that we will spread the word and people will, you know, mm-hmm. consume the fish for more than one reason, because it's good tasting, it's a healthy fish to eat,
right.
But also you're doing good for the environment. But if this fish does continue what it's doing, it's going to squeeze out other sources of seafood, and this may be one of the few species that'll be available.
Well, let me say this. I'm going to be going down to the Terrebonne Invasive Species little conference they have. This is what we're talking about, and the wildlife and fishery here is on board. They understand that too. The brackish water, we intend to do a risk assessment on the Asian carp, tackling our brackish water. Now, we're talking about shrimp. We're talking about oysters. We're talking about crabs. We know they're out there. We don't know the numbers of the Asian carp, but you saw, you know, a female – that the 35 pounder female we had the other day. Well, we opened it up. You saw the eggs in that female, 3.5 million or so. That is unbelievable. And you look at a survival ratio that even so, if it is to 50% or 40%, some actually scientists said they can get up to 70% survival ratio in some places. But the point I want to make is the reproduction of those fish are so incredible that we can't stop them. We cannot stop them. They eat plankton, the food source of aquatic life in general. So, yes, when you look at the reproduction level and you look at that they adapt to salt water, do you look at that they eat the plankton, the food source of aquatic life, you look at the fact that they can grow to 100 pounds, eating half of their body weight of plankton, then, you don't need a rocket scientist to understand the fact that if we don't stop this, if we don't not stop it, but if we don't try to control this, where are we going to be with this another 10 to 15 years? And look, we got a letter from the Mississippi Department of Wildlife with a guy going out there, speckled trout fishing, full salt water, and snag an Asian carp. Now, you told me, okay, it's a problem. It's a huge problem for sure. Recreational fishery and commercial fishery, not just commercial fishery, but recreational fishery as well. I mean, look, I am not going to say that the pickled trout are going down because perhaps something like that happened, but the fact that all the species, such as pogie, come and spawn into our brackish water, the shrimp come and spawn and reproduce into our brackish water, and so forth. So it's going to be a danger for sure for the whole entire ecosystem in our bayous.
You know, another thing that this fish has going for it is that it does not bite on a hook. I mean, so if it did, then the recreational fishermen could contribute to taking them. But because the only time you get them is when they make a mistake and they jump in a boat, or if the commercial, finally has an incentive to go get them, there's nobody taking these fish out of the water. I want to thank you for the demonstration you did. I want to invite people to watch this future episode of Bayou Wild where you put it on the grill, because I think what that will encourage is fishermen who do come across them, if they accidentally bite the hook, which I've had happen, it does happen on occasion, or jump in the boat, it's a fish that it's illegal to release it. So instead of just throwing it up on the bank and letting it rot or using it for crab bait, that's a very quick and easy recipe that you demonstrated. And most people can relate to how they do a redfish on the grill, similar.
Absolutely. Look, I was traveling on some rivers in central Louisiana, and you could look at the bank, and they were full of those Asian carp. People were out there, I don't know, catch them up, I guess, could not. You don't have anything to do with it. And then, trying back on the bank, it's not a pretty picture either, I can tell you.
No,
and again, it's a waste of natural protein. So the point I would like to make, Don, is that when I look at the numbers of dollars that has been spent just to protect the Great Lake, okay, and we're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars, you can take a fraction of that money and apply it to process those fish, okay, to fish cake, fish patties, and serve it to public school system. Do you think that will not be better than having electric barrier after that costs $30,000 a day in electric bill to just try to protect the Great Lake, but yet the fish somehow still go through? I mean, it's all kind of story years from both things. But think about it. Where are our priority, by God's sake? You know, where are the priorities of our policymakers that don't give a damn about the rest of the country with those fish?
That's government bureaucracy at its finest. Well, Chef, we're just about out of time. Want to invite people to come out and see you at the Beast Feast. They can get information and sample the fish cakes. Also, give them your website to find out a lot more information about these invasive species.
Well, you got canbeateem.us. We got eattheproblem.us. And then you have silverfan.us. So we have three websites out there to please the public to make sure that they can find us easily.
Very good. Chef, look forward to seeing you out there. Hope we get this good continued weather, and look forward to getting a little
It's going to be a nice
bite.
Weather.
Enjoy your Nutria taco this morning, too. Get a cup of coffee with it.
Thank you.
We'll see you. We'll see you, Philippe. Chef Philippe Parole, a guy that is really dedicated in controlling invasive species by the most logical and sensible way to do it, and that's to eat the problem if you can't beat the problem. All right, coming up after the CBS Sports Update, we're going to be joined by Jake Russo, Marvin Gressy. They're going to talk about the Beast Feast that we just talked about with Chef Philippe, tell you about some of the exhibitors, the demonstrations that will be going on, how you can get tickets, and get out and enjoy an evening of something you cannot buy in a store. A lot of this wild game is illegal to sell or process, so this is one of the few ways that you'll be able to get it. Also, if you don't like wild game, there's some great tasty seafood items out there, and it's also a fundraiser and got auctions and raffles and lots of other activities. Then after that, we're going to talk to, yep, like we said, we saved the best for last. 8-year-old Drew Dubuque caught a monster fish 1 week ago today. It's a pending state record striped bass, 33.9 pounds. Drew Dubuque is going to be with us. You can talk to him. You can also talk to our other guests. You can call us at 504-260-6368. We welcome comments, questions, and we have a text message board. It comes right in here real time to the studio. To get a text sent in, just go to 870-870. And we'll be right back with hour number four of our four-hour block of programming heard each and every Saturday morning with the Outdoors with Don Dubuque Radio Network and more Outdoors here on WWL 105.3 FM HD2 Radio.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.